Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Kent Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing on my coverage from Venice Immersive 2025, today's episode is with Walton Wonders, which is a mixed reality game that has both town building and kind of a simulation components. And so this is on the store. So this is a part of the best of selection. And so this is a game where you basically are creating these villages on the side of your wall. So it's mixed reality and you have to place these different buildings on your wall, and it's got mini games that you have and go and you gather resources. And so you have to earn those resources and spend those resources to do more buildings. So it's basically a town building game, but then you have this kind of simulation component where you're able to have these different characters interact with each other. They're even, you know, can date each other. And so you have this kind of more Sims type of situation as well. So this is a real interesting mixed reality game and pushing the edge for the affordances of what works well within mixed reality. And so overall, the center of gravity is the fire element of this game and this active presence that you're actually going through these different gameplay loops, and it's really structured around those interactions. But it's also the earth element and this kind of spatial construction and use of mixed reality to be able to build these worlds and build these structures, creating the context for other interactions that happen later in the game. And then it's also like an air element of these different dialogue amongst the characters and the ways that they're relating to each other. So more of that Sims type element. It's not really necessarily story driven. It's not something that really sticks with me, but it's really kind of driven by the desire to kind of explore and build and see what happens next. And so it's more of a game driven type of experience overall. And it's around the themes of building virtual architecture in a town, but also dealing with these natural resources and constraints, but also seeing the emergent social dynamics that are happening within this community. So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Ives happened on Tuesday, September 2nd, 2025, at Venice Immersive in Venice, Italy. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
So I'm Yves Agmans from the company Cyborn. What we've done in VR, in the past we made a game like Hubris, action-adventure game that came out on several platforms. In our latest game, Walton Wonders, which now is in Venice, is a mixed reality game where you build a town, a miniature town against your walls, and the entire town comes to life and you interact with the little people, play some mini games, and it's a feel-good game.
Great. Maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into this space.
Let's say we go a long way. Cyborn exists for more than 20 years. I came from games, then went to animated film for years. We did a lot of apps, early on the first AR apps, and then went now fully to games. Because the connection, we were always fascinated by new technologies, and that's why we went to VR, and then mixed reality came out, and we couldn't start to work in mixed reality.
Yeah, and what type of things have you personally done within games?
Within games? Yeah, let's say our own games, Hubris, and then now Walton Wonders. Before we worked, for example, on Horizon Forbidden West, but more like service provider. We did some little games early on, but more for merchandising purposes. And the rest, it's really old school. My start in games, that's really long time. I don't think that matters that much anymore.
Yeah, I'm just also trying to get a sense of your own personal role and what type of things you were working on this project.
Yeah, so I'm directing and let's say creative director mainly of the game. I also the founder of the company, and mainly the concepts come from me, but I'm not on the technical side, let's say.
Right. So where did the idea for Walton Wonders first come about?
Yeah. So we wanted to do mixed reality. We have a really good connection to Meta, and we knew like this is what headset would come out at that moment. And so I was thinking, I was walking around in my living room and thought like, what would I want to play? And it's not zombies walking in and shooting at zombies. And so I thought like miniature towns always fascinated me as a kid, I think as a lot of people probably of my age. and so the idea that comes to life in your living room, you can interact with it, and that it makes your living room more interesting because, it comes to life and it gives you a happy feeling. I wanted to make a game that make you feel happy, and that's basically the idea, and that's when we started to work on it.
Great. And so when you're starting to develop this experience, maybe you could talk a bit about, like, where did you start with starting to build this out? And imagine that you need to kind of prove out the core mechanics of putting these objects onto the wall. But I'm just curious how you started to iterate and prototype this experience.
Yeah, that was in the beginning very challenging because the hardware was still evolving. And so the tricky thing was indeed to how can we put these houses on the wall, make it all fit and then join together. Because if you build these different islands or houses and they can grow to each other and so on, that was a big challenge. So let's say that was the first challenge. Secondly was that you can have like little characters on your hand, and so they have to of course be in the same space and then connect to your hand when you walk around, and you can drop them off and things like that. Then there's like planes flying around that you can play with, but also balloons that have to connect to the town. So indeed the entire structure to be on the wall, stay on the wall, have all the same space and still work was a really big challenge in the beginning. And also, yeah, there's a lot of animations, more than 100 minutes of animations that all trigger around in the town and on different places. And to make sure that they all animate at the right spot in this space was a big challenge. Yeah.
Now, when you're starting to build out and design this game, there's a whole ecosystem that you're building, and so you're replicating like a town and a community. And so I'm just curious how you started to map out some of the core functions and things that you wanted to have as a part of this ecosystem or community.
Yeah. During the game it changed a lot because we were always like bumping into the technical issues, and then think like it's same like how do you animate, how you have all these animation interact, because some just trigger but others you impact with, and how then others disappear and things like that. That was really trial and error and sometimes limiting. Like we have a lot of mini games. Of course, you sometimes start out really big and think this is what we want, but you have to take in account all these technical limitations. So that was step by step trial and error, and then see what our engineers can come up with of solutions. So that's a lot of trial and error in this case. You couldn't predict everything because you have all these technical challenges.
Yeah, and you also have like a whole cast of characters and different roles that sometimes are very explicitly tied to some of these different new structures and buildings and contexts that are being developed. And so just curious to hear a bit about how you were doing the narrative design aspect of it, like the stories and the characters and a little bit of an arc or how they're going to develop as characters as they move forward.
Yeah, it's just a little bit like with the film script. You think of a character, but there's a lot of, let's say, have the same level kind of importance, apart from some who are more major characters. So you think about, of course, you have, for example, a minor, and you think, what's the backstory of this minor? You start to write some lines, and some ideas come up. And then also with the end interaction, like we want to have a really diverse crowd on it, you know, and so you have to fill in all this. These things like some are more funny, the other more are more nervous or things like that. So you start to think of backstories of it and then try to put them in. Like there's a lot of things, if you can dig a little deeper, you can get some more information about the characters, but it also reflects, for example, there's a game where they can date each other. And then you kind of feel the character a little bit more. And there's a lot of, you can date different people, choose like locations, for example, you could go to the sauna or camping or to the restaurant or paint each other. And depending on the characters and who you match together, they will react different on what the choices you make. And all this, we try to get these characters to evolve, that you learn a little bit more about these characters. And of course, because the game will have seasonals and so on, we can build further on it to try to expand that world a little bit.
And it sounds like also that this game, that if you tried to play through all just in one setting, that you would sort of bump up to, like, at some point you won't be able to get resources again. Or is it true that you have to, like, wait physical days before you can come back and then go and get more resources? Or if you wanted to play through straight through, would you be able to do that?
It helps a little bit to wait, but it's not really live service where you would have to play every day. So basically you could go on and go through the built entire town in one time. It will take you hours, and a little bit more than if you wait now and then, because there's timers that automatically you have some resources. But basically with the mini games you could push it and get it more. So it could be, but it's good to take some time and now and then log in again the next day. That helps.
And it seems like there's some core game loops where you need to get resources to build more of the town. There's food. There's other things that you're gathering. Maybe you just sort of describe some of the core gameplay loops that you have in Wall Town Wonders.
Yeah, you always need resources for the next building. Let's say that you're pushed to have all the buildings and upgrades, because they all have like several upgrades. You have to always have some resources to unlock something. And there's some more ways. In the beginning, maybe you need some mining. There you have different kind of resources. But there's always an alternative mini game, because it really had to be a casual game. As we knew it, a lot of people are new to mixed reality. We knew the public wouldn't be that big yet. So we have to make it really casual and not too hardcore gaming to go and mine and mine and mine. So we try to balance that people don't get bored of playing always the same minigame. And so you unlock new minigames along the way. And even with seasonal, you get other options to get the same result. So it's like, it has to be like, feel happy and play a little bit around, and then step by step your town expands.
Yeah, so there's like fishing and searching for mushrooms. Maybe you just describe some of the different mini games that are featured in Wall Town Wonders.
Yeah, for example, you have fishing, you have like diving game where you have to hire and hire from diving, try to let them land. It's more like the 80s games or the early games. Then you have like in winter, for example, you had skating, you had snowball fights, you can fly a plane and do quests with that. You have a balloon that you can tap around in your room and do it. There's a quest, for example, just to have to color butterflies who fly around. Yeah, there's a mining, there's some harbor where you have to, a boat game. There's some jumping, like almost like Frogger kind of game, the old Frogger kind of game. And there's dating where you can connect people with, yeah, and much more. But there's all these little mini games that are not too long to play and that have a lot of levels, so you can then unlock more and more resources with it.
Yeah, I really appreciated the way that when you put the different structures on the wall and then you can just really get up close to sort of like the closer you get, the more details you can see. It's almost like you're a cinematographer and you're able to be the camera person, and that you're able to kind of peek in and see all these different interactions and animations. And so, yeah, maybe just talk a bit about that core experience of being able to get up close and see all the wonders of the Wall Town.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely we wanted, because we really wanted that realism of like miniature. Miniatures are not real, but they look really real in your world. We want to have that. And it was really technical, of course, a challenge to get this. The closer you get, the more detail we can give it. And so we have a lot of tricks. We go a long way in graphics to still get more and more detail the closer you get. And if you zoom out, of course, you have to see a lot of polygons and town on the wall. So then the level of detail gets a little bit lower. In the future, if the headsets become stronger, then we can alter that. But yeah, we want to have that realism, that you have the feeling like in a miniature that you can come really close and see all these little details of paintings on the wall and little objects. And in the meanwhile, everything is alive. So the characters have to move and take, like in a restaurant, he actually comes to give people plates and pizzas and things like that. And we want all these little details that you can walk around, take a look from far, but then indeed zoom in and see all these little details. For example, if you hit the balloon, you can make them travel with hitting the balloon or blowing at the balloon. And then if you hit it really hard, for example, they can get like motion sickness in the balloon, for example. And that's the little details you can see if you come up close. But it was a big technical challenge to get all these graphics out of the system.
So when you're standing far away and you get closer, does it actually increase the resolution as you get closer and kind of block out other things so it doesn't, you know, slow down performance? And just kind of get a sense if you're dynamically loading like higher resolution depending on how close you are.
Yeah. The closer you get, the more detail you get. We have a maximum, it's like a headset, you have a maximum of polygons and textures. And you can do, and because the town is really, really detailed, and you can have certain moments like 20 buildings at your wall with all these details, so you never can get that out of a headset, like a Meta Quest 3, even you can't get that out. So that's why we built this system that adds to the texture details, to the polygon details, the closer you get. Like it is in a lot of games, I think the trick that's used a lot. But here we have a lot of tricks to even make the texture keep on getting more detailed the closer you get. Yeah.
And is that part of the system that is dictating where you can and cannot put buildings? Because, you know, as I was placing things, it said, oh, I can't put it here, but I can put it here. And what's the logic between the constraints of where you can lay out different buildings?
First of all, they have to be, of course, in the scan. We are depending on the scan data. That's one thing. But if there's a detection of a wall by the system, then normally you can build, but not close to the border of a wall, for example, because the house you build can expand through tires, and they can't expand in each other. So we kind of put borders there, and that there's, like, you can't build some buildings that close, and it may look like it's illogical at the moment, but because they expand, they would grow into each other. And often then, automatically, there's a bridge between these buildings or something. So there's some limitations, and that's pure practical, that they don't build in each other. Yeah. And you can always change all the buildings and start to replace them, but I know it's technical, especially as a casual game, if you say, okay, now you can't expand because the buildings are too close and you have to move the building, it would be too much to ask from the player, I think. That's the reason.
What's the genre of Wall Town Wonders?
We would call it town building, but it's not exactly, you can't put it that much. It's not like a mid-core town building with the challenges of making the right resource decision and so on. So it's, let's say, a casual town-building little adventure game, I think. Something like that. But it's difficult to say, yeah, it's a town-builder. I think the social part with all the little characters is more important. It would be a simulation, and let's say between a simulation and a town-building game.
Yeah, are there any other games that you used as inspiration to create Wall Town Wonders?
Let's say for the mini game, of course, you have all the, you think what are easy little mini games, probably a lot from that. We were in the beginning looking at Animal Crossing or The Sims or the city building games, but then along the way we had to be somewhere in between. A lot of inspirations, but not literally say we're in the same jar.
Yeah, in my conversations with other developers who have been working in mixed reality, there's been, let's say, an evolution of the capabilities of mixed reality and having to continually improve it. So over time, it's gotten better. But I know in the beginning, it was a little rough just in terms of getting everything set up properly and getting the scans and detecting the planes. And just curious to hear a little bit about your own experience of some of the challenges for developing for mixed reality as the development platform itself was also still being in development.
Yeah, first, for example, for us, like the first idea, because I came up with the idea when I was wearing this Quest Pro, like a very simple version of mixed reality at that moment. And I was thinking like, okay, we can't use the floors because people are moving their furniture and so on. So I choose for the walls. But I happen to have a lot of free walls in my in my house. But a lot of people don't. So like things you come along and say, oh, we may have that many buildings and people may not have that many open walls. That was a challenge. But scan-wise, I think we hoped it would have been more plug-and-play when the game came out. And I think the challenging thing for the scanning or hardware, which is not what we do, but we have to depend on the systems, is people tend, if they start to scan in a dark room and there's not enough light, then it becomes not that plug-and-play. And so the game is really casual, but the scanning indeed isn't that casual yet. And because we pushed the system, and even Meta was really big fan of the game, but they also know that having to use all the scans, for example, in the beginning when you move furniture and you had to rescan everything and put the town again on the wall. That's not a nice thing to have to do. So then it changes every several months, an update, and the better the scanning will be, the easier it will be to play the game. So that was a little bit, let's say we were a little bit ahead of time with the game like this. It would be easier, like if you have a mixed reality game that just needs one spot, like a tabletop, then you don't need all the scans. That would be easier. So that was a challenge indeed. And I hope it will become better and better. Like Quest SS infrared, so they don't have that much problem with dark rooms and things like that. But they have to educate also the people how to scan properly. If you just start and think, oh, I buy this game and I never did mixed reality, your first scan will be, for some people, difficult. So that's the challenge, I think.
Yeah, when I've done scans, even still, the user interface is a little confusing in the sense that there'll be like a little progression bar and then it'll be finished, but then you won't have the scan finished. And so the first time I would do that, then I would stop because I was like, oh, I guess it's done. But then, you know, I hadn't scanned the full room. So then I've kind of learned to ignore that progress bar and just keep scanning because it's not going to get a good mesh otherwise.
Yeah, it's true. And I think Meta is working hard on, they're aware of a lot of things and they're working on trying to improve that constantly. And same with Pico has a little bit another system, for example. So yeah, I think they are aware, but it would have been nice if they would have a really good tutorial for everybody. And indeed, like you say, with this, I had the same. You think, wow, I'm finished, but then you have half your house, which isn't enough for our game because you can use all the walls and all the furniture and things like that. So indeed, it would have been nice if that would have been more evolved when the game came out. But I think it proves every several months you have to check in and then they improved something that makes it easier, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of character animations in Wall Town Wonders. And were those all done by hand within the context of an animation platform? Or were you using motion capture in order to do the characters?
We have a motion capture studio for years. And so we do a lot of motion capture where we can. But we also have really good keyframe animators. For example, if someone is diving, you're not going to motion capture that. So we can do both. And some things are more cartoony. If it has to be funny, we can do this crazy stuff. Because we have a motion capture system, we have actors who can jump into the suit, start doing that for a day. So we choose depending on what's the fastest and best thing to do. But there's hundreds of minutes in it, and that's because it's for us quite easy to put in a lot of animation in it.
Yeah, and in terms of story, there's usually conflict that comes up and you can have like little mini games that have ways that you're fighting off bugs or whatnot. But I'm just curious from your perspective, as you start to think around Wall Town Wonder as both a game and story elements, how you think about the dramatic arc or the conflict or contrast that you're trying to create as people are going through the experience.
Yeah. Conflicts are really small little things. Like basically it's basically a happy, feel good game. So there's no fighting and killing, and there's like a naughty ninja kind of guy that or girl that shows up now and then and does something bad, but it's not really a drama. Or also it's more humor, like with the dating, if it goes wrong and they hate each other, it's funny part, but it will not be then going into a war. So it's not really too much conflict. It's more like funny little conflicts like in day-to-day life stuff.
And there seems to be also a mechanic of like leveling up some of the buildings that you have. And so just curious to hear a little bit around the strategy of how do you design once you level up, getting more benefits and everything. And yeah, just curious to hear around like how you start to map that out, like the overall trajectory of the town as it continues to increase its levels.
Yeah, of course it gives more resources when you, but it also expands. For example, is there a restaurant, they get a little extra department. But also there, a lot of these buildings, when they level, they unlock a new quest, for example. Or you build a blimp station, yeah, some building unlocks a blimp station, build a blimp station, and you have blimp, and then you start to have these quests. So it's like unlock, first of all, the rewards are you unlock a new building, something new to see, some new animation, but also some new little games to play or characters. Often with a new building, there's a new character arriving in town and a little bit new story. So that way we try to keep the game interested. And we now there are 3 levels, I think, or 6 upgrades, but 3 tiers of buildings when they expand, and then per building, and then we have another tire ready and made, but we keep that for future updates. So that's how it works. But yeah, a little bit like this, slightly like mobile games or this building game, that you get like little rewards and that keeps you wanting to do the next in little steps.
How many total buildings can you have once you finish Welltown Wonders?
I guess it were around 20 or something at least, and then you have like this little pool island and some little things that are outside of town. I think it's something around 20, and then all have like 6 upgrades, so you have like around 120, between 100 and 120 levels you can do to upgrade buildings. I think it's around that at this moment.
And then what happens when you get to the end?
At the end, you still can do mini games and so on, but then it's for a while. You will have to wait to have something new for seasonal updates, when then the town changes, you get some new mini games and so on. But basically, yeah, then you have built the town to the level it is, and then yeah, we're gonna have a next tire, and then you can go on building the next.
What's the reaction been so far from both here at Venice, but also releasing it out to the wider XR community?
I think the XR community is extremely enthusiastic. Like here in Venice, the curator told us, like, this is the XR experience to learn to know mixed reality and so on. And so the experience of people who play it and discover it in a really wide audience is really enthusiastic. It has to translate. It doesn't sell bad for a mixed reality, but of course the community on the headset has to expand that way. But the only bad, if we get bad reactions also in the store, it's almost always like because they're stuck in the scan, which is not our doing. but in general, you get a lot of good reactions. We went on Gamescom last year. We had a lot of influencers there checking it out, and we don't have much bad reactions, to be honest. I think it surprises people because they haven't seen anything like that yet. I didn't expect it could be impossible, I think, in mixed reality. So that's the good thing. I think we can surprise people.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the mixed reality component of actually being in my living room and putting the buildings around. And yeah, I think there's something different than just being in virtual reality, because a lot of the mechanics of the game are that you're actually moving your body through space, which, you know, I think when I play VR games, I sit down a lot. And so this game almost like forces you to stand up and to move around. But I'm not sure if you've tried to design it so you could sit down, or if it's really you have to be standing up to play it.
To be honest, it was meant to stand up and walk around in your room, basically. You can play it sitting down, but it's not ideal at the moment. I don't say we don't plan to do that in the future, but at the moment, yeah, it's always, of course we have a deal with Meta for Welltown Wonders, and it was meant like you have to use a room and have to have hand tracking and things like that. We knew that was something that was considered really interesting at the moment. We now know, of course, that the public is changing. There's a lot of new users coming. You can expect a lot of new users now with all the evolutions of the headsets in the future. And I think sitting down is a really good idea to have a mode, and we're thinking about that, to be honest.
Yeah, and I'm curious to hear your reflections on mixed reality, just because there's a magic to it, and I feel like Welltown Wonders digs into that, especially as you increase the resolution. It's something that, you know, I didn't necessarily like clock that's what you were doing technically, but there is a way that, you know, when you lean in, you get that higher fidelity, and it's a really nice experience when you are juxtaposing that amongst the barren walls of my home, and it feels pretty transportive, and you get this like suspension of disbelief that, you know, there's actually this living, breathing town that's on my wall at my home. But yeah, just curious to hear some of your reflections on just the experience of mixed reality, and why is it compelling?
Yeah, I think it's different. One thing of VR is I think you're really in another world, but there's also like the motion sickness and so on. So I think, first of all, mixed reality will change that for a lot of people who then maybe can handle it really well, VR. That's why there are a lot of, an army of kids are now entering the VR space. But some more people of another, like adults, some can't stand VR because of that, not being used to it. And I think mixed reality, first of all, will change that a lot, because you don't have motion sickness in mixed reality. But it brings on a lot of new possibilities. And I think we started with one-on-one. That's one of the things you can do with it. Of course, the question is, with not every living room will be suited for the same kind of experience. And I think if the more people start to do mixed reality, which will be, then you can have games that really are meant for a specific part of the audience, and then you can start to really interesting things. But for the same, you're going to watch in the future, you're going to watch like movies in mixed reality in same time, talk with people, do whatever thing you do on a mobile phone. And I think playing games could be like we do, like kids, like if you look in VR, my kids are 10 years old, they jump around for 10 hours and climb and do whatever they do in VR, which an adult is tired of after 5 minutes. So you're going to have different publics, and the challenge also will be, what will kids like in mixed reality? But it will come. It could be tabletop stuff, whatever. And there's so much possibilities, but it's about technical, the scanning, the devices, make it more light and things like that, that will make it more accessible. And then you can start to do the things that are easy to play and come in, play for 5 minutes and go out. I think that kind of experiences have a lot of potential in the future. So we're going to keep that in mind with our next project we're working on.
Well, with the mixed reality, you have the benefit of having like the video pass-through of the Quest and having like a fairly beefy XR2 Gen 2 chip from Qualcomm. But when you think about augmented reality, then you're going to have to start to potentially offload that rendering to a puck or to cloud rendering. And I'm just curious if you've started to do any R&D looking at how would you start to do the rendering of an experience like Wild Time Wonders if you were to try to translate it into augmented reality?
Yeah, we of course are doing a lot of R&D, and we have a really close connection to Meta and also the other headset, but definitely Meta. So we have a crystal ball and we do a lot of future thinking, like what are the possibilities about that. But I unfortunately can't say much about what we're working on the moment, but we definitely are gonna come up with some great surprises on that way that takes in account the future of what's coming. But I can't say much about it at the moment.
From what I've seen, it's surprising how much like cloud rendering or even rendering on a puck, that the latency still seems to be like good enough to provide like a good experience, just from what I've seen. So anyway, I don't know if you can say any more other than that.
Yeah, I think it's clear there's going to be a future when you have almost just glasses on and imagine that this ever will have, I don't say that's coming, but everybody can predict there it will end. You have a power of a Quest 3 or anything like that into just normal glasses. I think that once that, then you have all the possibilities there are. And it's a question of time, of course. And that's, nowadays, you have, of course, the Ray-Ban glasses are really popular and so on, but it's limited. But it's a question like, how does it evolve? And that's all I can say about it.
Well, what type of experiences do you want to have in either augmented reality, mixed reality, or virtual reality?
All of it. Of course, if you think about rocking around everywhere and you have all the virtual things you can imagine, the like characters, realistic characters in your room, whatever that comes to life. But I think it's going to be a part of a future that you can talk with people, the classical things, you can talk with people and they appear in front of you and things like that. That communication, but also having like stereoscopic movies playing in front of you. But yeah, the practical things, if you go to a shop and everything, information comes there and so on. That are the practical things. But games, I have to, of course, we're working on a game and I know what I want to do as the next thing, but I can't say what exactly it is yet. But yeah.
What's next for World Time Wonders?
Yeah, we're going to have some seasonals. They're going to be Halloween updates, and then we're going to have the winter update. And yeah, as you mentioned, we may have think of what would be practical on how to play it in the future and how it will work on the next gen headset and so on. So we will keep it evolving and see where it goes. Yeah.
Great. And finally, what do you think the ultimate potential of XR, including virtual reality, augmented reality, and mixed reality, and intersection with games and immersive storytelling, and what do you think the future of all that might be, and what it might be able to enable?
Yeah, I think it will open a new genre of games. I think you always will have like the full VR experience, and maybe there are going to be different glasses in the future for both. But XR is going to open a lot of possibilities in way you play a game, and the more people will enter it, the more you're going to have like really specific games that are just different from, it will not limit to your living room. It can be all combinations where you're playing together in a room or in a place or outside. I think that has a lot of interesting possibilities. Or the mixture, that some play in VR, some play in mixed reality, and then you can change it, you can interchange and so on. So especially if you can scan each other room and then let it appear stuff in others, if that's allowed, or there's also some privacy rules and so on. But that would be interesting if you can start really scan your own room and use that in your game, for example. So yeah, I can come up with ideas, but I, of course, now I'm focused on what's coming next. But I think once this all opens, it's going to be limitless in new genre of games, I think.
Yeah, and just a follow-on, just in terms of the larger ecosystem of games, I know there's been a lot of discussion in the broader community in terms of like sort of this pivot towards free-to-play games, and also with Meta opening up the App Store to basically have everything on the app. There is a combination of opening up the App Store, kind of a shift of priorities to free-to-play, but also their own Meta Horizon Worlds. Just curious, as you were in the midst of all these changes with World Time Wonders, if you see an impact of all these changes, and if you are able to still find an audience, and yeah, just any reflections you have with the changing dynamics of the XR gaming ecosystem when it comes to like the Meta platforms.
I think, let's say we're being a little bit lucky. You know, everybody had the impact, I think, of opening the shop of the premium title making companies, VR companies. So it has been heavy, I think, for a lot of companies, because the Switch, and as a lot of people know, kids have taken a lot of headsets and play hours and hours. Like my kids, I thought I gave them a headset, of course, a Quest 3S, and I thought they're going to play around several times and then they're tired. No, they play till the battery is done. They go play, if they are allowed to play that day more, they're going to maybe play some Roblox or some Fortnite or Minecraft on their computer till the battery is loaded, and they start to do with their friends. They come online, they start to, I'm Dutch speaking. My kids have learned at their 10, they can speak now English because they played like social games in VR, talking with English-speaking Americans and so on. They go online, start talking. So it's a really other audience. And they like free-to-play other, because their kids don't have money yet. But there's another generation, I think, they lost a little bit that generation because they switched, in my belief, Meta kind of chose to mobile because it was really popular with Quest 2, but they kind of dropped PC VR. And people who like the high-end graphics and so on. We were lucky that when Ubris came out, PlayStation came out, we sold a lot on PlayStation. It's quite successful. But I think they lost kind of that generation and they didn't connect to the Quest 3. They kept to the Quest 2. And so they have now, Meta is really aware of a lot of things. And there's going to be in the future, it's going to keep on expanding and you're going to have different audiences. And I think that's a big lesson everybody has to learn. Yeah, you have the kids and it makes a lot of money if you make that kind of games. And then you have Horizon, and Horizon can pull a lot of people to VR because it's also going to be a mobile, but that's another kind of style. And then you have the premium games, and they will have their place. But of course, as making a game for some studios takes 3 years or longer. And if you now making a VR shooter and there's like a lot of coming out, but the community is a little bit smaller at the moment there, then it's a little bit dramatic. And I think Meta is aware of, if you, let's say, co-finance a game that takes 3 years and the market has changed, that's really difficult. So they have rethought their financing systems and so on. And that's why we also choose to make games really quickly. Mortal Wonders was from concept to financed in not even 2 years, and the next will be probably in 1 year and a half. I think the market changes, you have to see where is it going and then adapt. And that's the difficulty, I think, and fortunate, because a lot of good games are made, but the audience can have switched and they may come back in the future. But that's the reality of a very fast evolving technology, I think. But it has been difficult, there's no lie, but I think there's a lot of interesting things coming next year. And I think everybody starts to feel it coming, that there's going to be a big new wave coming. And you have to be on that wave. That's the difficulty, of course, as a game company, to be at the right wave and keep... Yeah, we made an action adventure where you can swim and climb and so on and shoot, but we choose not to do that at this moment because we knew the competition would be really hard. And then you have the really expensive, like Batman and so on, you have to compete with. I think that it has been for some companies, unfortunately, really difficult, I think. But there's a lot of potential coming. Yeah.
What do your kids think of Walltown Wonders?
My kids, they really like it to play it short while, but to be honest, it's not really they like to do like hitting the balloon and playing the pipe. I have a twin, a girl and a boy, and the girl likes it. The boy is not really that interested because he wants to be in social games. They don't have to be good looking. They're VR and they, you know, the games like Animal Kingdom and things like that. That's the kind of game he wants to be in. And so, yeah, it's a different audience, to be honest.
Great. And anything else left unsaid you'd like to say to the broader immersive community? Any final thoughts you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think in the immersive community, I think this, I know that it's going to grow big time. I think next year, and it will not end growing. I think it's just an evolution, and it comes from far. And I think we had really interesting ways where you could have new things. And of course, then it goes down, everybody's seen it. But I think it's from being a gadget, it's going to be mainstream, I think. And that's a lot of nice things are coming. And I think that's, after a heavy period, maybe look for the future.
Yeah, very much looking forward to see how you continue to evolve Walltown Wonders and all these new platforms coming out from Meta, everything from their control labs, controllers, to like the augmented reality glasses, Orion, the, you know, all this moving in from the smart glasses at the one end, and at the other end, the mixed reality headset, and in the middle, somewhere that's going to have like video pass-through. So yeah, just curious to see how the platforms continue to develop. And it seems like Walltown Wonders as a game and an experience is really kind of suited across the full platform of all these different new platforms, that it could still be a compelling game across all of those. And so I'm sure Meta will hopefully open up some of these platforms to the point where most of like things on smart glasses has not been able to have anybody else other than their first party apps. But I imagine if they really want to have success on these other platforms, that they're going to be opening up to the broader ecosystem. And so, yeah, just curious to see how all of these different types of mixed reality and augmented reality apps continue to develop, because in my opinion, it is the independent developers like yourself that are really pushing the edge of what's possible and showing kind of the magic of what the medium can do. And I think that especially when it comes to mixed reality as it is today, it's a great example to see what's even possible. So yeah, thanks again for joining me here on the podcast to help break it all down.
Thank you very much for this chance, and have a nice rest of Venice, I would say.
Awesome. Thanks so much for tuning into this Venice Immersive 2025 coverage. And hopefully you found some use in some of this documentation of these experiences that are
very ephemeral. And some of these show at these festivals and they don't really go out widely beyond this a lot of times. I mean, maybe they are, but you may not be in a place that it's easy for you to see them. And so it's a real privilege to be able to see all these experiences, but also to be able to sit down with these creators and have a really deep, in-depth conversation in a way that there are not a lot of other opportunities to really dig into at this level. And so really appreciate all the time from all the creators to be able to have these conversations, but also for you to take the time to listen to them. And also it's been a challenge of trying to find a way of speaking about these experiences in an abstract, theoretical way, or at least in a way that I can ground it and allow you to put yourself into the experiences to kind of imagine some of these different things that they're doing, how I'm experiencing it, but also the different types of design decisions that the creator is making. So if you find this useful and want to support this type of effort of both documenting the history of immersive storytelling, but also to support this kind of wildly ambitious independent journalism project that is very much driven by support by listeners like yourself. So please do consider becoming a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening. Thank you.